This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, everybody.
Can't get enough of the Rich Eisen Show? You're in luck. You can find us everywhere. Watch us weekdays on Disney Plus from noon to 3 Eastern. Miss the show? We've got a podcast so you can listen anytime. But here's the best part. Our YouTube channel. Subscribe at youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show and you'll never miss a moment. Now, on with the show. Live from San Francisco, home of Super Bowl 60, it's the Rich Eisen Show. Today's guests, Pro Football Hall of Famer Kurt Warner, Cowboys wide receiver CeeDee Lamb, 49ers running back Christian McCaffrey, WWE superstar Seth Rollins, NFL Network analyst Steve Smith Sr., comedian Adam Ray. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Yes. Day number two of our three-day residency in downtown San Francisco is on the air. The Rich Eisen Show on Disney Plus, the ESPN app, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM Channel 80. It is another beautiful day by the bay here in the home of the San Francisco 49ers, and Christian McCaffrey is going to be stopping by this set, one of our six guests. We are six wide today here on this program, getting you set, or just basically with you, biding our time until somebody starts playing football in the Field of Jeans in Santa Clara, California on Sunday. Kurt Warner is here. He's going to be our first guest. But first, I want to say hello to my friends and colleagues, Christopher Brockman. Good to see you, sir.
How are you, my friend?
TJ Jefferson, fresh off of chatting with CM Punk on this stage for No Contest Wrestling that's out there. Oh, you have a little plastic mini candle, do you?
The candle is lit.
We spare no production expense here on The Rich Eisen Show. Mike Del Tufo, good to see you, sir.
Good morning, Rich.
How are you?
I'm doing very well.
We're fired up.
Oh, yeah.
This is great.
It's now the Super Bowl is coming. It's close.
It is. Well, I mean, we're, what, 72, 90 hours away? Can't figure that out.
No, we're not good at math.
We got NFL honors tonight, which means we're going to find out who's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame class. Seth Rollins is joining us in hour number two, so I can't wait to ask him if he had any advice for Bill Belichick to maybe show up tonight on crutches, throw them away. You know, it's all been one big charade. He would be
that
the one
would awesome.
Architect.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. That would be cool if that happened.
Who would know better than Seth, you know?
Nobody, because he lied to us. But we're still friends with him, and he's on this program in hour number two. And obviously, there's a big night tonight, which we'll be talking about all day tomorrow. One of the storylines of Super Bowl 60 I want to address right here, and I think it's only, you tell me, because you're the one who focuses on a town in a state that connects to California, where Mo Green does not have a signpost or a plaque to honor him, creating the town of Las Vegas, Nevada. You know, when Mo Green and The Godfather used to run molasses when Michael was a child. I'll stop.
No sugar.
Okay. At any rate, what's the line on this game?
Rich, it hasn't moved. It's still 4.5.
Okay.
Total still at 45.
Okay. And but there is a contingent, and I do believe it's significant, that believes that this is going to be a blowout win for the Seattle Seahawks. That you look at the way that they've played defensively, you look at their roster, you look at the way it's all played out this year, and that they're going to take the Patriots and spank them in Super Bowl 60. And all I have to say about that is, number one, is our first guest, Kurt Warner, is here. He can basically tell you, you know, about being a quarterback of an NFC West team that was supposed to beat a New England Patriot team, quarterbacked by a second-year quarterback, coached by a guy in his second time around as a coach in the NFL. What happened in that Super Bowl? That's one way to put it. And it's the kindest way I can put it, with Kurt listening to every word that I'm saying right now. But there's another reason why I want to point out that this is most likely, and I know Friday's a what's more likely show, more than not, it's going to be a close game. And the reason why is these two teams, for some reason, only play tight, close games. And I want to recount to you the last 10 times they've played against each other, what has happened. And then when it's all over, you tell me if you think Super Bowl 60 is going to be a close game or not. Do I have my music, Mike Del Tufo? Do we have some sort of
films,
NFL
music?
Films music?
It is music.
Okay, give me my music here. These are the last 10 times that these teams have played against each other. The last time they played against each other was September 15th of last season, week two. This is prior to Drake May becoming the starting quarterback of the New England Patriots. Yep. And this game was a 23-20 Seattle Seahawk win because with only 4 minutes left in overtime, Mr. Jason Myers is the one who split the uprights, and the Seattle Seahawks won in a walk-off overtime win that happened in New England last year. And then the time before that was week two of the 2020 NFL season when the Seahawks were and the Patriots were in Seattle. Seattle was up by 5 points with only one play left on the clock. That's all that was left. And guess what happened? Cam Newton from the 1 yard line with no time left. Have you heard about being on the 1 yard line with these teams taking on one another? Do you remember this on Sunday Night Football?
I do remember this game.
They decide to run it with Cam Newton.
Yep.
And instead of him scoring and doing the Superman thing, he gets upended, and with no time left, Seattle walks off with a defensive stop victory.
That was Cam's probably best game for the Patriots.
In 2020. Then the time before that was 4 years before that in week number 10 when it was another Sunday Night Football game. This game taking place in New England. Tom Brady looks for Rob Gronkowski, fourth and goal from the one with 11 seconds to go, and Seattle's up 31-24, and you're sitting here thinking, if they score, do they go for two in the win? And instead of Brady finding Gronk, Cam Chancellor is all over Gronk, who's left staring at the refs. Where's the flag? No flag on the play. And that's the way the game ended with 11 seconds to go. Seattle winning in New England with just 11 seconds left. And that was, as we all know, a little bit of revenge taken on New England, because the time before that, 4 games ago between these teams, was in fact the matchup in Super Bowl 49 that we're all talking about. And we all know the way that this ended, with Malcolm Butler picking off Russell Wilson on the goal line with 20 seconds to go. Those are the last 4 times that they've played against each other. Let's go back now to the time prior to Super Bowl 49, week 6 of 2012. And everyone kind of remembers the way this game ended after the game. It was a 23-17 lead for Seattle, by New England. And with a minute 20 to go, with New England up on an upstart Seattle team with the Legion of Boom, Russell Wilson fades back and finds Sidney Rice for 46 yards.
Yeah, I remember this.
For a touchdown with a minute 20 to go. And then Seattle's defense protected that 1-point lead. Tom Brady deep in his own end on 4th and 17. Couldn't make the first down, game over. And that's when Richard Sherman famously went up to Tom Brady and said, "You mad, bro?" And that's the way the Legion of Boom and Richard Sherman was essentially introducing themselves to the world. Beating New England and Tom Brady in Seattle was a pelt on the Seahawks wall.
The audacity to say that.
To say the least.
I think he was mad, though. That's
those are the audacity. Last 5 times that they played against each other. Let's now get to the back half of the 10 that I'm referring to. Week 14 of 2008. You betcha we're going back to this one. Patriots are up 24-20. One on the Seattle Seahawks, and what ended up happening was Seneca Wallace at midfield gets sacked, ball is down on the ground, future Hall of Famer Richard Seymour recovers, and this is the way they backed up Matt Cassel getting the win against the Seattle Seahawks with a 2-point conversion on top of it, 24-21 in Seattle. And we all know this was the year New England won enough games normally to make the playoffs but didn't make it. This is when Tom Brady had a knee injury in the beginning of the season. But again, this is a tight game that went down to a sack fumble on Seneca Wallace recovered by Richard Seymour to end the game with 1:54 to go. Before that was week 6 of 2004 when Corey Dillon took a 3-point Patriot lead with the first play after the 2-minute warning, turned a 23-20 Patriot lead into a 30-20 Patriot lead. So a 9-yard run right after the 2-minute warning. New England wraps that game up. That was close. And it's the only time you're going to see right here that it's a double-digit point margin of victory for anybody in this series. Week 8, 1993. Ooh. It's the Patriots in Seattle in Bill Parcells' first season at the helm. It's 9-3 New England with 28 seconds to go. Third and goal from the, you betcha, 1-yard line. Rick Meyer finds Brian Blades in the end zone as Bill Parcells falls to 1-6 in his first season as head coach in New England. And believe it or not, but due to a scheduling anomaly in the 1993 season, the Seahawks and Patriots played each other twice. What? And 5 weeks before that Week 8 game in 1993, the Seahawks were in New England, and that's when Chris Warren of Seattle gave the Seahawks a 17-point lead that Drew Bledsoe started to come back on, finding Ben Winter Coach, and Sam Gash runs one in the end zone to make it a 17-14 game. Scott Sisson, with 30 seconds to go for New England, sets up for a 54-yard game-tying field goal. It's up, hits the crossbar, and bounces back into the field of play. Woo. That was 9 times ago that they played each other. And again, 10 games ago between these two teams in Super Bowl 60, 1992, the Week 3 game between the Seahawks and the Patriots in New England, Hugh Millen found Irving Fryer for a 36-yard touchdown, but Charlie Bauman missed the extra point, meaning it's a 10-6 game with 45 seconds to go. New England's got to score a touchdown. Hugh Millen throws it into the end zone, and it's intercepted by Patrick Hunter, who is a Seahawk defensive back who wound up playing for the Seahawks for 9 years, and he is originally from San Francisco, California, where we're getting set to see a Super Bowl 60 between these two teams. You tell me if this game's not going to come down to the wire and it's going to be a tight game, because that's all these two teams somehow, some way, for whatever football god's reason, they play these tight games. So Super Bowl 60 is either going to be the 11th in a row between these two teams, where something happens in the final 2 minutes to either win the game or force overtime or go to overtime. If you think that this is just going to be another such game, good. Or you think they're due for a blowout, I say history says tight ball game in Super Bowl 60. And interestingly enough, as we just wrap this thing and put it in a bow, talk about scheduling anomalies. That last game that I mentioned where Hugh Millen could not lead the full comeback.
Hugh Millen.
And obviously, you know, that was Dick McPherson's last year. They bring in Bill Parcells. They draft Drew Bledsoe, and off they go. That was a Week 3 game, but it was just the second game of the season for New England. The Patriots had a Week 1 bye in 1992.
Whoa!
Could you imagine
how,
in this day and age, if they tell a fan base of a team, hey,
what?
Everybody's playing kickoff weekend, but we'll see you in Week 2. Could you imagine if that happened in this day and age?
Why?
Well, there were two bye weeks back in the
day. I have no idea. A Week 1 bye.
Wow.
So their Week 3 game was drop them to 0-2.
Oh.
At any rate. A little history lesson for everybody to start our 6-wide show. Look who's here is our first guest. Coming up next, one of our favorites. And I'm not just saying that because he's here in the flesh. Kurt Warner, good to see you, sir. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Kurt Warner is going to start us off on this Super Bowl Thursday from San Francisco when we come right back.
As you know, managing maintenance, repair, and operations is never easy. But for the ones who always rise to the challenge, Grainger has your back. From professional-grade products you can count on to fast, dependable delivery, they're there to help you keep things running smoothly. Plus, their technical product specialists are here to help answer your toughest questions. And because Grainger knows safety is always a priority, they're committed to being your partner in protecting both your people and your facilities. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
The Rich Eisen Show podcast.
Kurt Warner here on the Rich Eisen Show. Our radio audience has just returned. So, you know, you are the personification, as we all know, of magic carpet rides. Yeah. And I always love talk. I don't talk with you about this enough, but it is that week.
Yeah.
What were you thinking on the day of the Super Bowl at the end of your journey of your first year? What were you thinking, Kurt?
You know, the interesting thing is you always wonder when it's going to hit you. You know, we talked about that first year, and it was such a whirlwind. You know, you get in, and the season is, you know, magical season. Everything goes like, you know, you can't imagine it going any better. You know, my first playoff game, we always talk about the first pass I threw was a touch. Yeah, like it's just, you know, so many different things. You're like, how does this even happen? But the moment I remember it really sinking in, now don't judge me and my wife for this because we had purchased this home. But after the NFC Championship game, we were in our bedroom, and whoever built the home before us, not us, put a mirror up above the bed. Okay, so again, don't hold this against us.
It's all good.
Don't hold this against us. I mean, but yeah. I remember we were so exhausted, and we were just laying on the bed, and we didn't even look over at each other. We just looked at each other through the mirror, and we're kind of like, we're going to the Super Bowl. Like that was the moment where it really, you know, the whole journey just kind of sunk in. Like, oh my gosh, this is real. You know, because that was the moment you just had a chance to take a deep breath before, you know, all the craziness of the Super Bowl. And then the Super Bowl again was a whirlwind because it's so different. You know, like tonight we get to go to Honors and they celebrate everybody at Honors. That first Super Bowl of mine, they did like all the MVP and the players of the year and all that throughout the week.
Yes.
And so they would have, you know, luncheons or breakfasts. And so I just remember every day I was in a car, you know, rolling to someplace and then doing media. And then I remember when I got to the game, I was like, can we just get this game over with? Like, I was exhausted after the week. So I love the way they do it now. But that's kind of what I remember about the Super Bowl week was like, man, can we just get through this game? Because it was just so much hype that I was just kind of worn out and kind of done with all the stuff at that point, which is kind of a bummer. You know, it's the biggest game of your life. You don't want it to just be over. But, I mean, it was just it was a lot of things different. But my moment was really after the NFC Championship game when we were going, and me and my wife just kind of looked at each other like, wow.
Yeah. You
know? Wow. Is the mirror still there, Kurt?
What's that? I don't know. We don't own that house anymore. I do not know.
How dare you?
What has happened to the mirror?
Everybody. How dare you?
What's that?
How dare you?
Everybody was stinking it, so, you know.
His movie was rated G. Okay?
Exactly.
Come on now.
I did not put the mirror there, people. I did not do it.
How dare you?
Did not do it.
How dare you, TJ?
Rated G.
Curtis, sorry for that visual.
Courtesy cars and ceiling mirrors. Yeah. We knew that's what was his Super Bowl experience. I didn't see that coming. So listen, Sam Darnold's journey, your journey is so unique, but his is now five teams in. You know, your journey was international also, right? So what do you think is going to sink into Sam Darnold's head Saturday night in his hotel, Sunday morning waking up, Kurt Warner?
I think it'll be very similar, you know, just to whenever that moment is where it really hits him, like, wow, you know, look where I've been over the last, you know, 5 years and five different teams and bouncing around. And, you know, I had a chance to interview him for game day morning and just asking him, you know, what was the toughest moment, you know? And so reflecting on those moments along the way where you just think, my gosh, you know, I got drafted by New York and it's over in New York. What does this mean for me? And then bouncing around and then becoming a backup and just, I'm sure, at numerous times wondering, will I just be a career backup? And so I think all that stuff at some point, whether that's before the game, the week leading up, maybe even after the game, you know, all kind of comes into focus and you appreciate it. And, you know, what I love about, you know, even the Super Bowl, just looking at the quarterbacks, is like we've got Drake May, who's like the golden boy, you know, second year, you know, drafted third overall. He's to the Super Bowl already, which is what we want for everybody. But then we have Sam on the other side, which is a journeyman. And, you know, it took him some time. And he didn't just, you know, come right out of being drafted and find a perfect situation and have success. And so it just shows us that there's so many different ways to get here, to get to the mountaintop and, you know, finding the right spot and maturing and growing as a player is that two different ways of doing it and finding yourself on the biggest stage. So I think it'll be a great storyline as we get into this.
And even making that better is two different ways, but from the same position in the draft, third overall.
Exactly, right.
Both third overall picks in the AFC East.
Yep.
One got drafted by the Jets and one got drafted by New England. And now here they meet in Super Bowl 60. And, you know, early on this season, Kurt, when we were talking to you every single Wednesday, QB Confidential is how everybody can see what you're basically we're about to talk about here on your YouTube channel, that you were saying, where I'm like, who looked the best on film this week? Who did this better than most? And you said Drake May a couple of times, and you pointed out how his deep passing game are like the longest handoffs in the NFL. You were saying that in September and October. Mm-hmm. What are you seeing out of him now, though? You're seeing him going against tougher defenses and hitting a rookie wall, if you will, in his second year? Is his first time going through being a quarterback all this time, or you're just seeing a gamer, man, who's just getting it done however he can?
I think the thing about Drake is, like you said, his season was incredible. I mean, I think Matthew Stafford's going to win the MVP. Mm-hmm. I think Drake is going to be the runner-up there, but was incredible. And like you said, the best deep ball thrower in the league this year. Playoffs, they have played really good defenses. I just don't feel he's played very well, though. I feel like he's played faster. He's missed a lot of things that he made during the regular season. But the one caveat is when they've needed big plays to be made, you know, he's made them. You know, against the Chargers, they only scored one touchdown, but it was late in the game, a third down situation. He buys time and throws it. Against the Texans, they got a fourth down situation, hits the slant, touchdown, and then obviously the late go route. And then, you know, against Denver, it was more running than it was throwing, but a couple key throws in that game. And so that's kind of been his MO. I feel like he's going to have to do more. They're going to have to do more in this game to win it than they have throughout the playoffs.
Why do you think that?
I feel like Seattle has ramped it up and is playing their best football now. So as good as New England's defense is, I feel like Seattle's going to score some points. And so I don't think they're going to win this thing 10-7, or a low scoring game. I think they're just going to have to do more offensively if they're going to win.
Did that start, do you think, in the week 16 Thursday night kickoff between the Rams and Seattle? I know Seattle's played excellent football throughout the season. I know they had some boat race wins that the defense against Arizona at home, against Washington on the road, basically told Sam Darnold take the rest of the afternoon off.
Yeah.
But do you think that comeback, Sam Darnold-led comeback win in overtime over the Rams was
I do believe it was a catalyst, and specifically for their offense. Like you said, their defense has played good all year.
Right.
Offense has been solid, but that was when they just started to take off. And again, you know, interviewing a couple of the guys this week, just asking them, when was that moment for their team? And they all kind of mentioned that game, week 16, coming back, beating the Rams. It was really what catapulted them and made them think, hey, we got a shot at this thing. But I do believe that's where their offense and just Sam's confidence, you know, because there was all the questions about Sam going into that, and they're down two touchdowns in the fourth, and, you know, can he win in these kind of moments? I do believe that gave him a sense of confidence that he's carried through, and the championship game, it was unbelievable.
The recipe for a Patriots win then is what? Drake May puts him on his back? Is that what you're saying?
I believe the recipe is, like they've been winning, defense, defense, defense. But then just what we talked about, Drake May going to have to make some big plays. You know, if there's one thing that you saw, like when the Rams played against this Seattle team, is Seattle didn't give up a lot of big plays, but the Rams found ways to get big plays. Mm-hmm. You know, in the championship game, there was a number of double moves that they used to get big plays against this Seattle defense. I think if New England's going to win, they've got to generate some of those big plays. What Drake's done good all year long, he's going to have to do that well in the Super Bowl, and they're going to have to steal, you know, some big plays, some big play touchdowns, or steal some drives, you know, with big plays in them if they're gonna win.
Well, you know, an easy follow up to that, you know, Davante Adams can give you those chunk plays, right?
No doubt.
And there's Stephon Diggs and there's Booty, and you can sit here and wonder who are the big play guys going to be for New England. But really, the way a double move can hit is because there's protection up front.
Always.
And the Rams' protection up front, I would say, certainly over the last month, better than what we've seen out of New England. And that may be the ultimate, whether the Patriots' recipe for a win is they have to protect.
Yeah.
They got to protect it. And if you're talking about May speeding up, that's the way you get sped up, you know?
I feel like it's going to go both ways. New England has been great at getting pressure to in the playoffs and pressuring, you know, bringing extra guys. That's been one of their calling cards in the playoffs. So I do believe that part of it for both sides, you know, can you rattle either of these quarterbacks? Can you get after them a little bit? Will be extremely big.
Mm. How about us chopping it up, talking Super Bowl ball with Kurt Warner?
It's kind of cool.
You know? You guys got
doesn't suck.
You know,
you guys got. Have you decided yet?
Yeah,
obviously. No, he has.
Obviously.
I know, he's got his team.
I just Rockman. Here's what I don't understand surrounding the talk around this, and like a lot of chatter about a potential Seahawks blowout, right? Yeah. The Patriots were the second highest scoring team in the league this year. You know who was number one? The Rams. And what did the Rams do in three games against Seattle?
See,
put up a lot of points.
That is spoken like a Patriots fan.
Yeah.
See that? You know, like, did you forget about the last 3 weeks in the playoffs? That doesn't really matter. Like,
did you,
I get it. No,
Kurt, here. See, you and I are seemingly alone on these playoff games should be played in perfect conditions island, okay? Yeah. The Patriots played in a rain, sleet, frozen rainstorm.
Right.
Against a Houston.
Awful.
And a second half whiteout in
Awful.
Denver.
No doubt.
What is the quarterback supposed to do in that game? So, yeah, it's going to be
ugly. There were still opportunities there. That's all I say.
Well, he threw a great pass to Matt Collins.
But I agree with you. They were great in the regular season.
You don't have something called, you know, CB confidential. He's QB confidential. You understand? There's no Chris Brockman confidential.
I'm just pointing out that the Patriots' offense has been great all year.
I agree. But
I don't see a reason why they can't score on the Seahawks' defense.
No doubt. But it's so much about when you get into the playoffs, how you're playing right now. What's it been like? Yeah. Recently, yep. And that's the thing that I worry about with the Patriots. I agree with you. They were great all year. Big plays all year long. Just haven't seen it in the playoffs. So that, to me, is why a lot of people are leaning more towards Seattle, because they're going like this, you know, especially offensively, where New England hasn't been going like that. And so that's what people see. But I'm fully with you. They've got the capabilities. They got two backs. They got some playmakers on the outside. They've been big plays all over the place all year. Yep. No question. And their defense has been turning the football over. Defense – creating turnovers.
Did
you pick up on that?
Yes.
What happened there, Mike?
Kurt just.
He just went higher register.
Exactly.
He did. Yeah, you have a chance. I mean, you guys got a chance. Hey.
Trust me.
No, I see it. I can see what you're saying. No, I got it.
Anybody knows they got a chance.
I'm with Chris.
I know they got a chance.
That's right.
I'm with Chris.
I mean, this
people
guy knows
saying the Patriots haven't played anybody.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
Now
it's like
ridiculous.
I've seen the Patriots win Super Bowls enough
right.
that there is not a chance that
right.
people that are sitting there saying that, they're nuts.
But there's only one team that comes into the Super Bowl that has a fan base talking about schedule and weather. The other one has beaten up everybody pretty much that they've done that needed to with regularity.
True.
That's probably why people are leaning towards Seattle in that regard.
True.
You know, but you're right. You know, you just need to go a little higher register.
That's you can. Let's go.
Son.
I mean, I do not want a game like last year. Let's just get a great football game.
Oh, yeah.
It's See? Tight in the end. That's what it's all about. I did not want the blowout like last year.
See, and Kurt went ahead and gave you the reasonable aspect of how New England can win, which is better than Tom Brady, right? I mean, he doesn't care. Tom Brady doesn't care who wins, you know? Yeah, what's up? Yeah, ask him what's up with that.
What's up with that?
Here's the thing.
What's the thing? What's the thing?
The grown men in the New England area and in the media there are being so cringe about this. Here it is. Tom Brady is part owner of a team not named the Patriots, okay? He's literally going to and trying to hire a coach for Seattle. So what's he supposed to say? I'm rooting against this guy I'm about to hire?
That's interesting.
Do you think that guy...
He's about to poach Clint Kubiak. So you can't sit here and say I'm rooting against.
I mean, you don't even have to say I'm rooting. Just say I'm cheering for my guys. Like, the organization, they were great. Yeah, I'd love to see them win. Like, even if say I'm not, I don't care if Seattle wins. But say something positive about your guys.
Yeah.
You know, Mike Vrabel, your guy, like, I don't think anybody is going to hold it against him because he's hiring Kubiak to go, I'm cheering for Vrabes.
Yeah.
Like, he's my dude.
Cheering for Vrabes.
Who cares?
But more importantly, do you think Kubiak's going to go, I'd take that job, but since you didn't pick us.
Yeah, Brady could say, I'm rooting for New England because of two things. One, Vrabel, he's my guy, you know. Right. They put a statue of me in front of the stadium. And two, if New England destroys Seattle, it means I can get Clint Kubiak around the third quarter. I can get him early.
Rich.
You know what I mean? He can enter the transfer portal at halftime.
Yeah, that's right. There you go. But we care about everything. Yeah. We care about what everybody says. I don't know. Just
say
cheer for everybody.
Yeah.
Be excited for everybody.
Cheer for everybody.
Guess yes. Kurt Warner says.
I'm cheering for my coach. I'm cheering for my guys. I'm cheering for everybody.
Cheer like, for everybody.
I want everybody to win.
Yes.
Yeah.
See, they're calling the cops on you, man.
That's it.
It's such a bad take. They're calling the police.
Leave Tom Brady alone.
Who are you taking? You're leaning.
Okay. I always reserve the right to change it because it really matters on Sunday, but I'm leaning towards Seattle.
Well, our Zoom is tomorrow. Our pre-broadcast Zoom for. By the way, we're late for the pregame show.
Yeah, how many hours, Rich?
It started yesterday. 8.5 hours.
Eight and a half.
Oh yeah. So we. By the way, I talked about this on the show the other day. Somebody in the text chain is like, "What about the heat?" You know, 6 a.m. out there in Santa Clara. It's going to be cold. I did chime in after you saying, are we having heaters?
What about the heat?
Basically.
I asked if we're wearing coats.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Like, right.
You know, because.
Were you packing?
Well, yeah, I was packing. Exactly. So I wanted to know, like, are the guys wearing coats? Like, you don't want to show up one guy in a suit and the next other guy's in a coat. So it's like, are we doing coats? Are we not doing coats? I can handle the weather. I'm going to be okay.
I'm not playing in it, so
I'm good.
Did you pack the coat?
Yeah. I did not pack. No, I can't.
Is that because Mariucci said he would stick a poker in his eye if you
no
had
way.
It?
Hey, I'm letting that be the storyline for an 8.5 hour pregame show. Like for a TV game where I'm on the air for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It can have its moment, but I'm definitely not doing that for 8.5 hours.
The Smithsonian, to be honest.
Right.
Just anyone wants to know.
We need to retire that somewhere and have its own place.
Give it to us on their studio.
That's perfect.
The puffy coat.
Can we have it?
Well, puffy coat.
I can do that.
Yeah, we'll shiny suit man.
Yes. I can do that.
With Rob Lowe's NFL shield hat after he wears it in Super Bowl 60, because he is wearing it as he returns to the scene of the crime of the original Levi Stadium NFL shield hat wearing, right? We got that going for us.
We're going to get Stan Gable's football jersey.
That's right.
My cargo shorts.
We're going to get that.
Okay.
We're going to all work it. Yeah, Mariucci said do not wear that jacket. It's possible. Again, by 8 o'clock, we'll be fine.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Sun up, we'll be good.
That's why I just wondered if we
6 a.m., though, it's going to be brutal.
For the first couple segments, if we're all going, you know, but we got to look good together. We got to fit, you know what I mean?
And before we go, how is everything going with Treasure House?
Kurt, Treasure House is great.
Tell everybody about it, please.
Yeah, so it's a community living facility for young adults with intellectual developmental disabilities. We've got one in Arizona right now, completely full, thriving. Young men and women that are there just loving it. It's really become home, and now we're in the process of finishing that off, paying off, you know, that building there, and then we'll move around the country and build them all over the place for families like ours that are everywhere.
How can people give?
Just go to treasurehouse.org, and you can find out all the different things that we're doing, number of fundraisers that we do. You know, you find what we're doing, it connects with you or your community. We love to hear from people on where we want to build the next one and how we want to grow from here and, you know, connect with the right people. So treasurehouse.org, you can find out all the information.
Good to see you, Kurt Warner.
You too, buddy.
Good to see you. We hashed
enjoy the rest of the week.
Kurt Warner. Yeah. Thank you very much. That's Kurt Warner here. Check out Kurt with me and freezing our asses off at 6 a.m. Pacific, 9 a.m. Eastern time for a special 8.5 hour edition of NFL Game Day Morning to take you to kickoff of Super Bowl 60. Hey, TJ Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb is going to be in hour two, apparently.
Oh, that's what I hear.
I've been told Seth Rollins is here, though.
I saw him bopping up the street.
So Seth Rollins is going to be next on the Rich Eisen Show. We say goodbye to Kurt and hello to Seth Rollins when we come back.
The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.
Back on ESPN Radio, Seth Rollins is here. WrestleMania returns to Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas, Nevada on Saturday, April 18th and Sunday, April 19th. Third time that Vegas is home to WWE's biggest event of the entire year. Check out tickets at Ticketmaster.com. Ladies and gentlemen, Seth Rollins is here on the show. Overall, I know you say you hate football when the Bears lose, but you love football at the end of the day, right?
With
the Bears.
I loved football this season.
You damn right you did.
I loved it. I could not believe every week I couldn't believe this was my team.
Mm-hmm.
Every week. TJ was a part of it as a Cowboys fan. He was sure that the Cowboys were going to beat the Chicago Bears.
Yeah.
He was sure. So sure, he put me on a text chain with fellow Bears fan Ashton Kutcher to try to brag about the game. Chicago Bears.
By the way, he guards Ashton with his life. His information, any dropping of his name. You don't do that. So this was big for you.
It was a nice introduction. Two Iowa Bears fans.
Yeah, of course.
I've been playing in this, like two Iowa guys that both love the Bears. Yeah. I'm like, you guys should be friends at some point. And I figured it was...
Yep.
It was good enough for me to be able to trash talk them both at the same time. But again, it did not work out in my
mind.
What I was about to ask is that would you have done it if you thought the Bears were definitely going to win that game? You would never have done that. You were confident. That's what Seth is pointing out here.
Now, I feel like those two need to be in each other's, you know, universe at some point. Nice. So I would have done.
He's a giver.
It was, but it was of course a benevolent text. Yeah.
It wasn't. I'm sitting there.
No malice meant by it, you know.
I'm sitting there. There's videos getting exchanged. They're laughing at each other. And I'm just sitting there like, what is going on?
Yeah, it was a great 60 minutes for us.
Well, but what a year, though. I mean, I was mentioning that after the Rams did end the season of your Bears, that every box got checked. Ben Johnson, real deal. Ben Johnson able to make Caleb Williams a better quarterback? Check the box. Caleb Williams looking that he could be better than just a better quarterback? Check that box. Defensively, can you win games when you're trying to take the ball away and sometimes you don't? Check that box. Believe that you can win anytime, doesn't matter the score. I mean, I just checked
it
about
was
six
all,
boxes,
it was
man.
All there. And one of the things that kind of gets slept on a little bit is the Bears had, statistically and overall, I think, the best rookie class from the draft last season. I mean, from Luther Burden to Kyle Manongai, they were making big, I mean, Colston Loveland. Mm-hmm. I mean, offensively, those were huge.
What did I tell you about my Michigan title?
Dude, what a stud.
Right?
Yeah.
Stud. Came on strong in the second half of the season.
Did.
Became. I mean, he might have been the Bears' leading receiver.
He was.
I know Roma Dunze was for the first half of the season. Kind of got hurt.
Yep.
And it was a little tricky. But
yeah.
Loveland, that Loveland to Williams
right.
situation, like that's going to be there for a long time.
And Wright becomes an all-pro, man.
Yeah, like, Nashawn Wright out of nowhere.
Yeah, sure.
Jalen Johnson goes down, you know.
The offensive line. I mean, you got
that was huge.
All-pro on that.
And you know what people were dunking on, though, is because those were big signings in the offseason. They were like, these guys going to be able to come. I mean, everybody knew Tooney was a stud. Dahlman, we didn't know. Jonah Jackson didn't know what you were really getting there. The way they gelled, Darnell Wright on the edge, too. Like, that offensive line was great.
Yes.
DeAndre Swift had his best season with the Bears.
I mean,
it was a special thing to see all of it come together. And, it's, you know, you mentioned Caleb, but you cannot speak to this season, he became a star.
Yes.
He became a star.
100%.
And that's... We just haven't had that. I mean, Jim McMahon, Jay Cutler was, you know, Jim McMahon was the last star the Bears had at the quarterback position. And Caleb Williams is a star.
I'm happy for you and all the Bears fans for sure. I've got Seth Rollins here on the Rich Eisen show. So tonight is NFL honors.
Sir.
Seth, are you going to
I'm
NFL?
Presenting.
Oh, what are you presenting?
Whoa.
Okay.
All right. I didn't think it was that.
No, I know.
This is... I mean,
he should be presenting. Did you take that as an offense that our reactions all?
No. I just wouldn't expect it. I didn't expect they were so excited about it.
Yeah.
What are you presenting?
I am presenting that. That'll be fun.
I would think you'd be presenting Comeback Player of the Year, man. That's perfect for you. As a matter of fact, Seth Rollins, you know what I'm doing tonight is I am with Kurt Warner, who just preceded you, speaking of Iowa guys sitting in this chair, that I am a part and parcel with Kurt introducing the Hall of Fame class.
Amazing.
And we were just talking because, you know, Chris is a diehard Patriot fan. If Belichick makes the Hall of Fame class anyway, despite all of what's been reported, and who would be able to maybe help with the presentation of running an okey-doke about what is being said publicly?
That would be amazing.
What would you think? I mean, how would you, like, if Belichick shows up on that stage tonight at the Hall of Fame, how would Seth Rollins
Can you imagine the
that?
Pop the reaction if they're announcing the Hall of Fame, you know, for this year, and they get to the final one and you think it's over, and then the curtain drops or out for the stage comes, I mean, the place would come unglued.
How would you stage it?
That's exactly what I would do. I mean, I don't know how they, I don't know what the procedure is.
Yes.
You know, are they all there?
And yeah, they're well, if they're, you know,
able,
in town.
Yeah,
able.
Yeah, so get them all on stage one by one, announce them all, make it look like that's it. We're going off the air, put the bug up, you know, it is the whole thing. And then, bam, in the last minute, hit the music. Hit the music, man. Yeah, let it go. You know what I mean? Yeah, shock the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
And let him go out there and just bask in it. And to be fair, he deserves it. He deserves that moment. He's the greatest coach. He's the greatest coach to ever coach.
Yeah.
What are we talking about? I can't even believe we're having this conversation. It's so ridiculous.
So would you dress him in a hoodie as well? Like
put him in all black.
Yeah, right. And silhouette him or something,
you know,
like that. Smoke. Like, what do we do here?
You could go full Undertaker style. You could black the house. Oh. Right at the end, that blacked the house. Yeah. What happened? What's going on? Yeah. Lights back on. Yeah. There's Belichick right in the center.
Comes out the crazy train.
There you see.
There's the music. That's the music.
That's it.
Okay, we're workshopping. We're getting there. Would you give him crutches to throw away?
Well, I mean, he's not hurt. You know, I think
well, you weren't either, apparently.
Well, that's part of the thing, you know. That's neither here nor there. It's a different,
that's him throwing away his crutches.
Good shot. Yeah. You could line that up against me. It's perfect.
He's got a tearaway hoodie that he comes out.
That's it. Yeah, the tearaway hoodie.
Pops it
there you go.
And then he sprints to the ring. Oh, wait, that was.
I don't know if he's sprinting anywhere these days. He's wandering in, you know.
See, I think we found something here. This is.
You know.
How wild would that be if it happens tonight, right?
If the NFL has any guts. If you've got any guts, Goodell, you'll make it happen.
So I guess Roger's the Triple H of our operation, pretty much. I got you.
He runs the show.
Okay.
He's the head creative guy, man.
I knew you'd get it.
If they made an WWE Unreal about the NFL, Roger would be the guy.
Speaking of Unreal, I got a little bit of a problem with Unreal.
Okay. Sure, of course you do.
You know you're my man.
Yep.
All that. And you know, I think we played a big part in the ruin of the century. So Unreal pops on, and I'm like, all right, bet. This is the Seth episode. And I'm looking and I'm watching and I'm watching and I'm looking. Waiting. And I'm expecting to see you hosting the Rich Eisen show because I felt like we added credibility.
You did.
And yet there was nothing about you going out on a mainstream show that I was a little shocked that it
was the thing.
There.
I don't make the editing decisions.
I know you
on
don't.
That.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not allowed. I'm not a producer on the show. So you can take that up with Ben Hauser, who put the thing together.
Oh, I know Ben.
Ben.
Okay, well,
Ben,
okay,
Ben,
I know Ben
from back in our day, right?
Yep.
Ben Hauser.
Ben
yeah.
Hauser, Triple H.
From ESPN.
Be
right?
Fitting.
Just say,
you know, I know these people.
You know these people.
I have their numbers in my phone.
Yeah.
I was going to ask for names. I need names.
There it is. I just outed all of them. I got no shame. I'm not taking that hit. I'll throw them all under the bus.
As you should.
I agree. Should. They should have put it on here.
That's
you guys
all right.
Were an integral
and we,
part.
We understand that because we still have our Chire tracks on the back of us from your appearances.
Oh, yeah.
As the guest host. It's all good. It's
man,
all good.
It was great. It was a moment in time, guys.
It was amazing. Yeah. I loved it. Yeah.
See, I knew you would know how to stage tonight's Hall of Fame moment.
That's what they
for that to happen.
What they should do.
That's what they should
that's
do.
That's what they should do.
I don't
they got to get it right.
Gonna happen.
And then you're calling a guy climbing up the side of a building. You're doing it all, dog, right now.
Yeah, that was bonkers.
Good
that
Morning Football airs Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. Eastern Time on NFL Network all week long with this man leading the way with the rest of the crew of Good Morning Football, Seth Rollins. And Ticketmaster.com to go get your tickets right now for WrestleMania in Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for coming on, brother.
Oh, that's
great
it?
To see you. Yeah.
All right.
Well, CD Lamb's sitting here.
We gotta get CD.
To him. There he is.
There he is.
What's up?
Cowboy.
The Rich Eisen Show Podcast.